Welcome to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us today. Our program is packed with interviews, insights about instincts. We are going to move swiftly between scenes today, so grab your lunch and settle in for the fastest radio hour in town. We return to our usual format this week. Expert guest, guest with guts, quick nip, and then the mailbag. Remember, all of our shows are on podcast at my website, www.friendlyfearnotebook.com, and at our radio station's website, www.wcomfm.org. Let's begin. A voice of reason in a diet-crazed world thus introduces our topic today, which is about fearless eating. Listen to the words of my expert guest, Dr. Michelle May. Most diets are restrictive and unsustainable, leaving the dieter feeling guilty and disappointed. My goal is to help people recognize and cope with their triggers for overeating, rediscover joy in physical activity, and effectively nourish their body, mind, and spirit. Michelle May is a physician and a, quote, recovered yo-yo dieter. She punctuates her vital message passionately and with the revealing insight that only a recovered dieter could know. Her lessons transform the way her audience view weight management. Michelle's interest and expertise rest squarely on two pillars of experience: her own personal struggle with chronic dieting and her years of clinical experience with patients battling their own weight problems. Yet, unlike the cookie-cutter-style platforms of Count and Deliver, Dr. May's work addresses the why we struggle with food. First, she crafted her own peace with food. Now she shares a compelling and compassionate approach that empowers individuals to take charge of their lives. Sound familiar? All of our recipes here at Courage Cocktail insist on this one classic technique: wrestling back power from circumstances that undermine our own sense of control and well-being. I encourage you to visit her website at www.amihungry.com. Listeners, that's one word, am I hungry? Michelle joined me for a conversation last week where she highlights the power behind her message and how her patients respond to this deceptively simple yet elegant outlook. Now, one final thought before we listen in. Can a radical thinker be gentle? You tell me. Welcome to Courage Cocktail, Dr. Michelle May. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning. Eat what you love, love what you eat. Where did you get the title?
Oh, I love that title. It's actually, I think, a good representation about what this book is all about. Eat What You Love really refers to fearless eating, meaning that we get rid of all the attachment to bad and good foods and I'm bad or I'm good. Loving what you eat is really about mindful eating. So enjoying the foods that we choose for their flavors, their healthfulness property, the ability to connect with one another. So eat what you love, love what you eat basically boils down to eating fearlessly and eating mindfully.
Where did you come across the notion of eating fearlessly?
Well, it goes all the way back to my own personal yo-yo diet story. I started dieting when I was about 10 years old. I was a chubby kid, but, you know, really in retrospect, looking back at pictures, probably not so unhealthy, but it started me down a long, long path over 20 years of dieting. And I realized after long last that it was really the dieting that was creating a lot of my emotional triggers for overeating. So we hear a lot about emotional eating, right?
Yes.
For me, the primary emotion for overeating was deprivation, restriction, and guilt. Mm. And I have found in my medical practice that many other people were dealing with exactly the same issues. So the idea of fearless eating is about getting rid of the guilt around eating so that you can really pay attention to what you enjoy, what feeds you, what nourishes you, and then lose all the other attachment to food when you're not hungry.
Describe yo-yo diet.
Well, it's really important, I think, Leanne, because, you know, I called myself a recovered yo-yo dieter for a long time. But what I really came to embrace is the idea that a yo-yo is either up or down, or it's on its way up or it's on its way down. And in fact, that's what happens to a lot of people who diet. They're either getting ready to be good or getting ready to be bad, depending on whether they have a reunion or a cruise or a doctor's appointment coming up. Wow. So I realized that the problem with that metaphor is that a yo-yo has no middle stopping place. You are either on your diet or off your diet. Oh. But a pendulum is a much better metaphor, because when we stop giving overeating and restrictive eating so much of our attention, it loses energy and it finds a smaller arc in the middle where there's a balance between eating what you love and eating what nourishes you. So eating for enjoyment and eating for nourishment. When we stop paying so much attention and energy and angst about the food that we eat, we naturally gravitate toward balance, variety, and moderation, and it frees up our energy to do other things that are more productive and healthful and helpful.
What must one do to recognize where they should stop or where they should begin?
I think when you find yourself doing the same thing over and over and over again and getting the same results, It's time to wake up. In fact, that was my own aha. I was literally in the car on my way to a popular diet place that many of our listeners would know and have been there themselves. Mm-hmm. And I had my little book. I was a lifetime member. I had done this over and over and over again. And I thought to myself, this is crazy. If I had to go to medical school 17 times and start over 17 times, somebody would have said, you know, you're really not cut out for this. So recognize the insanity, recognize that what you're doing isn't working. That doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, but perhaps the system itself is too flawed to fix.
What do you recognize in the force of pushback from the calorie counting culture?
You know, I think that our society is really blind to this whole issue. We've been dieting for so long, really actively for the last 40 or 50 years, but even longer than that. And so it's really become part of our lexicon. Mm-hmm. So we have this paradigm that to be a healthy weight, you have to restrict, deprive, count, weigh, measure, and that... Right?
Yeah.
And that your results can be measured on a scale. In my experience over the last 12 years of teaching people mindful eating and fearless eating, none of that turns out to be true. The less I weigh, measure, and count my food, and the more I get internally connected to what my body needs, the better, the healthier I eat, the more balanced my diet is, and the more free my energy is to be focused on the real reason for eating, which is living, right?
I think you call that eating is about fueling living.
Absolutely. And I think eating nowadays has become an activity in and of itself. Now, I want to clarify that. I'm a foodie. My husband's a professional chef. I love amazing food. I love wine. I love chocolate. I love just about everything. But I don't obsess about it. I don't choose to spend all of my time thinking about it. But when I'm hungry, and that's what we're doing, I love it and enjoy it thoroughly. However, when I was dieting, and a lot of the people that I work with who spend a lot of time on restriction and overeating, food is the primary focus. In fact, people over-diet the same way they overeat. They're still thinking and talking about food all the time and not freeing up their energy to use their fuel in the way that it was really intended, which is to work, play, exercise, engage, socialize, contribute to society. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I sure do. So you're saying that it swells and it takes this sense of deprivation
we get kind of hung up on that. And as soon as we kind of let go of that, we have more space to welcome in life and love.
Absolutely. I think that was beautifully said, and it's true. Now, I know people don't believe it because, again, remember, our paradigm is that we have to weigh, measure, count, and obsess about food or we won't eat healthy. But it turns out not to be true at all. Now, let me give you just a couple of basic examples. The first thing to think about is a young child or a baby. Mm-hmm. You know, that baby does not spend every waking hour thinking about food. That baby knows when it's hungry, and it will insist on eating when it's hungry. And in between times, it's almost impossible to get that baby to eat.
Yes.
Now, as they get older, we can train that out of them. We can reward them with food. We can bribe them with dessert. We can clap and cheer when they eat all their dinner and shame them when they don't. However, early on, their instincts are to eat when they're hungry and stop when they're full and not think about food in between times. The process of dieting teaches us to think about food all the time. And ironically, dieting is supposed to be the solution for thinking about food all the time.
So when we think about food all the time, that takes away energy to think about other things.
Mm-hmm.
How do you convince people to try your methods?
You know, that's actually a wonderful question, Leanne, because I struggle with this because a lot of people who would benefit most from this don't know it exists or don't believe it's possible. They've been dieting for so long that their belief is that they will lose control if they let go of that control. Now, here's the thing. Remember the pendulum metaphor we were talking about earlier? A pendulum does not go from swinging wildly in one direction and the other to stopping dead in the middle. But if you allow a pendulum to slow down gradually and start reintroducing the foods that you love back into your diet and freeing up your energy from weighing, measuring, and counting to really taking care of yourself, that pendulum will find its own natural balance in the middle. Now, I'm a foodie. My husband, as I said, is a professional chef. I love all these foods. I also happen to love yoga and hiking. So I have a pretty wide pendulum. A person who has diabetes or food allergies or is really concerned about nutrition or health or organic or local or any of the other things that might affect your choices, they might have a very narrow pendulum. But the point is that they get to choose that arc for themselves. It's not up to me, the diet expert, to tell them what they can and can't eat. It's up to them to figure out how they feel their best, how they function their best, and how they're able to go and live their life without obsessing about food all the time.
And you do this by placing some degree of control back into their hands.
Not some degree, complete control back into their hands. And here's the thing. I see my job as the mindful eating expert as really just a guide, just a person who teaches people how to recognize the expert in themselves. In fact, the first chapter of Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat is titled In Charge, Not In Control. And what I meant by that, Leanne, is that being in control has this element, this suggestion that I've got to hold on by my fingernails and think about it all the time and make the perfect decision every time. And that's not actually been my experience at all. What I've found is that I am completely in charge of my decisions. And sometimes I make the decision to eat the chocolate. Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I make the decision to have that beautiful salad and skip the cheese because I had cheese in my omelet that morning. You know, I am in charge of those decisions. I don't need to be in control and make perfect decisions, but I have to be mindful enough to actually decide rather than acting out of habit.
Could you describe to me this, I call it the invisible decisions, which is we either fall into or fall out of habits, and place within that this current belief that there's an email that went around today in my box that was describing the love of monotony and how helpful it is to get bored with your food because you will then lose weight. How does this fly in the face of or support your belief system?
Well, I think the idea that we make invisible decisions all the time is really important. I teach a concept. I didn't invent this concept. It's well known in the behavior change and positive thinking world. But there's this concept that our thoughts lead to our feelings, which cause us to act in certain ways, which give us certain results. In the Am I Hungry workshops, we call that TFAR, T-F-A-R, thoughts, feelings, actions, and results. This turns out to be a cycle because if I think, for example, that I am addicted to sugar and I'll lose control if I have even one bite, then I feel disempowered and out of control and weak. And so my actions are that I avoid the sugar. Then when it finally shows up and I'm hungry and I'm stressed out and everybody else is eating it and I say, forget it, I'm going to have it anyway, and I begin to eat it, my thoughts tell me, oh, I'm addicted to sugar. I'll lose control. If I have any, I'll eat it all. So I proceed to do exactly that. I then eat all of the sugar. I feel horrible, both physically and emotionally. I've proven myself right. See, I'm addicted to sugar. I lose control every time I have it. So I have this unconscious thought that I can't control myself around sugar. It causes me to feel disempowered. It causes me to restrict, then binge, then feel bad about myself. And I get into this invisible loop of behavior that I blame on the sugar and my own lack of willpower without seeing the truth, which is that if I believed that I was in charge and could make mindful decisions about whether I have the sugar or not, then I could choose to have it if I really wanted it.
The all or nothing belief is so embedded in our culture that I could see how one person struggles with this, but at the same time, you're suggesting that when one recognizes they do make decisions, that they are in charge, it takes away that emotional sense of control and failure and the risk of messing up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, going back to that pendulum model, all or nothing, all or nothing.
Right.
Every time you pull that pendulum far to the right in nothing, 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 as soon as you lose a grip on it for whatever reason, it will automatically swing all the way back in the other direction. So doesn't it make logical sense that instead of continuing to pull it back all the way and try to hold on to it and then letting it go, doesn't it make more sense to find a smaller balance in the middle? And again, going back to the examples of people who do this, besides babies and young children, we all know somebody, a friend, a spouse, a child, somebody who eats effortlessly this way. They don't obsess about food. They eat when they're hungry. They stop when they're full. They eat what they love. They eat the things that we feel ashamed or guilty about eating, but they eat them in moderation. They can stop. They can leave food on their plate, and then they don't obsess about food in between times. That's what I call instinctive eating. And the truth is, and the whole purpose that I live to do this work, is that I believe that all of us can maintain or relearn the ability to do this. And that's really what Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat, the book is about, and Am I Hungry Workshops is about, is helping people relearn these skills.
When you talk about effortless eating, I find it inspiring. And I began to think about the very thin people I know who apparently don't have weight management issues and perhaps could benefit from this work, this notion that we can find a middle ground.
I think that's an important point. You know, my original work started in helping people who were struggling with weight. What I've come to realize over the last 12 years of doing this is that it's much more profound than that. It is about finding that natural state of fueling living. And whether you struggle with weight, health, nutrition, or any other aspect that is affected by eating and physical activity, by the way, which we can talk about, whether you struggle with any of those aspects consciously or unconsciously, by the way, there are a lot of people who are thin but would really benefit from healthier eating and physical activity. Yet because our whole society's paradigm is based on weight instead of health, those people may not be paying attention to the messages out there that might be helpful to them. Likewise, if somebody is a healthy weight and feels good at their weight, whatever that is, I'm not in any way implying that healthy weight is determined by the cover of a magazine.
Sure.
I'm saying that a healthy weight is where you feel that you can do the things that you want to do in an unimpeded and joyful, vibrant fashion. But if a person is a healthy weight, then they get to make choices about their eating. And all this information out there about nutrition sometimes turns people into food police or food Nazis. And I think, it's just because you're restricting for health reasons, it's still a diet. Whether you're doing it for weight loss or doing it for other reasons, it's still a diet, and it places too much energy in an area that I don't think is quite necessary.
I get a sense that your program may be built for adults. However, how can parents use this insight to help develop healthy relationships among our children with food?
Well, you're right. It is currently for adults. I'm a family physician. I'm a parent, and I have a passion for teaching parents how to parent better. The reason this is important is because, as I mentioned, we are all born with the instinctive ability to eat this way, but we unlearn that process with time. So if parents have consciousness about it, they can avoid doing some of those things that can cause us to unlearn those messages. In fact, one of my favorite things that people say when they do the Am I Hungry workshops is, this has changed everything about the way I parent my children or the way that I talk to my children about food. So let me give you a few specific examples, which we've kind of touched on.
Yes.
Getting rid of the message that you have to clean your plate. You know, that's an outdated scarcity message that was appropriate decades ago during famines and world wars. It's not an appropriate message in our current food abundant environment.
Okay.
Rewarding children with food, you have to eat all your dinner to earn dessert, is also an outdated scarcity message. Dessert should be enjoyable, and it certainly can be part of a healthy diet. But when we restrict and reward with dessert, then we're implying that dessert is special. Mm. And it actually gives that food more power over the child than is necessary. Whereas if we teach people that some foods are for health and nutrition and enjoyment and other foods are just for fun, then they're much more likely to be able to make those decisions when they face them in a day-to-day situation.
So wrestling this reward systems out of our parenting hands actually supports a long-term, more stable, and perhaps a more generous perspective on life and fuel and food.
Absolutely. And I think we have to also wrestle it out of our own heads, because many of us carry these invisible messages that we don't recognize, and they do fuel our eating. We buy a meal at a restaurant and we think it's a great deal because it comes with this big full plate, and then we unconsciously move into our clean your plate, please, kind of mentality. And the next thing you know, we've eaten three meals for the price of one. So I think that...
what a bargain.
What a bargain. Oh, boy. It's so important to recognize where these messages have been embedded. And I'm not blaming parents. I'm not even blaming our culture. I don't fault our food environment. This is capitalism. This is the way the United States works. However, if we don't take charge, if we're not in charge and conscious of the decisions we make in a food abundant environment, of course we're going to struggle. Of course we're going to fall prey to advertising and messages that lead us down the wrong path.
And those messages are becoming ever, ever more subtle and potent. You mentioned that you studied this for 12 years. Over the course of those 12 years, there are so many more ways we get our information beyond television. And do you see that the stakes are any higher?
Absolutely. I think it's the noise is coming from everywhere. It's coming from our doctors, it's coming from our parents, it's coming from our girlfriends, it's coming from the internet. Everywhere we turn, somebody has an opinion about what we should or shouldn't eat. And again, I don't fault all of those. In fact, I think it takes away our power to blame the external world. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that we need to take personal responsibility and be in charge of how we manage those decisions. So if we're making decisions unconsciously or mindlessly and doing whatever the advertisers, for example, want us to do without realizing we're doing it, then, you know, again, we're going to struggle with these issues. But if we say, oh, isn't that interesting? I saw a billboard or I saw a commercial, and now I feel like having that particular food. That's so interesting how well that works. However, I choose not to have that food right now, and instead I'll wait until I'm hungry and see what I feel like eating at that point.
You know, we summon courage on Courage Cocktail, and I'm listening to the context building that's going on here and taking responsibility. It sounds to me as if one must first raise awareness within themselves, herself, before taking any steps forward.
I think that's an important point because the concepts we're talking about are big. It's unlikely that somebody would turn off their radio or listen to this and suddenly be transformed. But I hope that you and I have planted some seeds. I hope we've opened people's eyes to begin to increase their awareness about their own decisions. And here's why I think that's so important. When we act mindlessly, we react. We replay our old behaviors over and over and over again. That's TFAR, like we were talking about earlier. We react instead of respond. When we become conscious of what we're doing, because truly awareness is the most powerful agent of change, when we become mindful and conscious of why we do what we do, then we can choose to respond or respond in a responsible manner. So I think it's a very different place to come from when I'm coming with awareness without judging or shaming myself, but just awareness. Isn't that interesting that I would do it that way? Where did that come from? How did that happen? And what do I choose to do now that I'm aware of what I've been doing in the past?
Are there any tricks that you could share with us?
Yes. In fact, it's funny that you use the word trick because it seems like that's one of the diet industry's favorite little sort of ideas is that there are tricks.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out that one of the most powerful, deceptively powerful things that you can do is whenever you feel like eating, pause and ask yourself a simple question. Am I hungry? So asking the question, am I hungry, gives you a little bit of space between wanting to eat and starting to eat. Now, here's how I think about it. If you're driving down the road and you see a gas station sign, you might think to yourself, oh, I wonder if I need to get some gas.
Right.
What would you do next?
Look at my fuel tank.
Exactly. You'd look at your fuel tank.
Indicator.
So asking the question, am I hungry, is really about checking your fuel gauge, checking your fuel indicator to see if you actually need fuel. That's the ability to say, well, I could pull into this gas station if I really wanted to, but I have 3/4 of a tank. That would be a waste of time and money. Instead, I choose to keep driving, and then when my fuel gauge drops, then I'll go get some gas. That's really what this is all about. So asking the question, am I hungry, is a simple thing you can do to increase your awareness. Now, I want to add something here, Leanne, because if I leave it at that, then there's a danger that people will turn this into a diet, because what we've been trained to do is turn everything into a rule. So some people would listen to that and say, okay, so whenever I feel like eating, I'll ask myself, am I hungry? And if I'm not hungry, then I can't eat.
Okay.
That's a rule. That's a diet. And that tends to be counterproductive. We're asking the question, am I hungry, not to decide whether we're allowed to eat, but to figure out why we want to.
Well, when we talk about our emotions and motivations for eating, we're talking about more than hunger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's important that people understand that emotional eating is normal and it's healthy. It's part of how we're wired. It's normal for us to love one another with food. It's normal to experience pleasure and enjoyment with food. It's normal to socialize around food. It's even normal to choose certain foods that have pleasing properties when we're feeling sad or stressed or depressed, right?
Sure.
Those are all normal responses. Where emotional eating becomes problematic is when people always reach for food instead of using those emotions as a gauge for what else their needs might be. So if I'm stressed and I just shovel down food to feel better, then I haven't dealt with the source of my stress, and that stress is going to come back again and again and again and trigger more and more eating. So I'm not really using my emotional cues to help me take better care of myself.
So our emotional cues are our punctuation for our behavior.
Absolutely. Remember, thoughts lead to feelings, lead to actions, lead to results. When I'm aware of what my feelings are, I can choose my actions. I can decide how I'm going to act in that situation. If I'm feeling stressed and I take a step back and say, instead of eating this row of cookies, I want to figure out where the stress is coming from, and then perhaps maybe decide that I need a little help with the housework, or I need to let my boss know that I'm not going to make that deadline, or whatever it is that's causing me to feel stressed, I deal with the source of that stress, I feel better, and then later if I'm hungry and I want a cookie or two, then fine, no problem, but at least I haven't used the cookie to avoid taking care of the true source of my needs.
When you describe those examples, to me, I hear powerlessness as a motivator for stress.
I think powerlessness is important to recognize, because when we choose food instead of meeting our true needs, we're choosing powerlessness.
Yes.
We're saying, I do not have the courage, nor do I choose to look for the courage to deal with what's really going on here. Instead, I'm going to push it away with food. Now, again, people most of the time aren't choosing. They're reacting. They're doing this mindlessly out of habit. It may have been a habit that was built into them in childhood. Mm. But once you have awareness, once you've read this book or been to a workshop or listened to this podcast, mm-hmm. you suddenly have the ability to say, you know what? That worked for me in the past, but I don't choose that anymore. I choose to have awareness about why I'm eating. I choose to ask myself, am I hungry whenever I feel like eating, and pay attention to whether those are physical cues or head hunger, so that I can choose how to best meet my own needs.
When you use that expression, head hunger, it's a beautiful phrase. It's so powerful to me as a listener. Is that truly heart hunger?
Well, it can be a lot of different things. In fact, some people eat for reasons that really aren't emotional, but maybe they're environmental. Just the sight of food, the presence of food, inexpensive food, food they've paid for, food that's free, ironically.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's a physical trigger like thirst or pain or fatigue.
Mm.
And sometimes it's heart hunger. Sometimes it's a spiritual hunger, an emotional hunger, an unmet need, a deep-seated pain. So when I talk about these things, I don't want everybody to feel like, oh, I have a weight issue or I have a food issue. I must have deep, dark psychological problems. To turns out that a lot of us have just learned habits for taking care of ourselves. And once we have awareness of those habits, we can choose to change them. For some people, just recognizing that their triggers are environmental in nature, they can eliminate or decrease those environmental triggers. For example, putting food out of sight, choosing to co-order or co-eat instead of having a huge plate of food in front of them, for just a few examples. I think that we don't need to be afraid of addressing this. And in those situations where help is needed, there's lots of people out there who can help coach you or counsel you through this process if you need more support.
You used a term there I've never heard before, co-order/co-eat. What does that mean?
That's my husband. That's my term with my husband. When we go out to restaurants, he's a foodie as well. He's the professional chef.
Oh.
When we go out to eat, we love to peruse the menu and decide what would be so amazing and wonderful and pleasing and pleasurable to eat. But we also know that most of the time the portions are too large. And so we will co-order and then co-eat. We'll order together, choose the appetizer or the main course or the salad or the dessert or whatever it turns out to be, order together, decide how we're going to split it up, and then eat together and enjoy that thoroughly as a shared experience.
Oh, I think that's just lovely. Now,
it beats the old diet adage of order a to-go pan, cut it in half, put it away, and then don't open it till you get home tomorrow, you know, whatever.
It's so funny you use this as an example, because I can tell you I would instantaneously drop 10 pounds because my husband eats so fast. I would never keep up with him.
Well, that's actually a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, Leanne, because that's one of the processes that we teach in Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat. And that is that eating quickly does not allow us to gain full pleasure from our eating. It also doesn't allow us to pay attention to our body's signals. So oftentimes when, for example, during our Am I Hungry workshops, we do a mindful eating exercise, a potluck actually. Hmm. And what a lot of people suddenly notice is that they'll load a fork full of food, put it in their mouth, and then immediately begin to load the next forkful while they're still chewing the one that's in their mouth. Well, you know, it's interesting that people think they can multitask. You actually can't. You can only pay full attention to one thing at a time. So your attention is drawn to loading the next forkful instead of tasting the one you're eating. So we turn eating into a mechanical process, a task to be gotten through, instead of enjoying the flavors and tastes and aromas and sensuous experience of eating itself.
I went to a dinner that was called Eating in the Dark, and they provided us blindfolds. It was a formal meal. It was in sponsorship of a foundation that supports seeing dogs and providing them for families and individuals who need them. And what a shift in our awareness of the pleasure of eating when you couldn't see the food. You were limiting your senses, and you had to dwell in the moment.
Oh, I love that you've had that experience. We just did an Am I Hungry mindful eating retreat, and that was one of the experiences that we did. We had our group eat a blindfolded dinner, and it was really interesting. Some of the feedback that we got, similar to yours, is that once the cue of whether the plate was clean was gone, people found that they ate much less, but they savored much more. Now, some people tend to eat with their eyes, and they found it disconcerting not to be able to see their food, but it certainly heightened their senses of taste and aroma and texture and other kinds of things that I think we just tend to ignore when we're eating fast or eating in front of the TV or paying attention to calories instead of the flavors of the food itself.
You know, what I find so attractive about your message is gentility. You're gentle. You're gentle about who we are, the human spirit, and you're patient and not supporting the notion that somebody is inherently good or bad because of their eating behaviors.
I think that's the hugest compliment you could pay to me, because I think it's a very respectful approach. I think it's us as writers and facilitators respecting our readers, our workshop participants. It's us as individual respecting our history, the messages we've acquired, the culture that we live in, and then still not abdicating that responsibility, but saying, you know, I do the things I do for logical reasons, and I choose to do them differently by taking one step in the direction that I wish to go. I want to learn how to eat what I love fearlessly and love what I eat mindfully, and that is possible.
Is there any final thoughts that you may want to share with our audience, our listeners, and drinkers of Courage Cocktail?
Well, I love the concept of Courage Cocktail. I think it's an amazing concept. And I think that one of the things that we haven't touched on at all that I want to leave you with is the idea that everything that I've said applies to physical activity, and it also applies to how we live our lives. If we can stop using exercise as punishment for eating and as a negative have to, and find that balance in the middle of what do I love to do, what gives my body joy and energy, and find those things in a respectful, gradual fashion, what changes can I make to be more physically active? I think we can rediscover that playfulness that we had as children. I also think that it applies to the way that we live our lives. We're far too hard on ourselves. We demand ourselves to be perfect all the time, and that leaves us feeling flat and empty and guilty and sad instead of energized and joyful. So living your life fearlessly and mindfully eventually leads to the ability to love what you do and do what you love just as much as we eat what we love and love what we eat.
Eat what you love, love what you eat. Each day we make invisible choices. We fall into habits and then fall out of them. The pendulum analogy that Dr. May shared with us makes sense to me. I know firsthand this phenomenon. I simply call it snapback. The idea that I can devote tremendous energy, staying in control, until out of the blue some trigger pushes me over that edge, and I find myself in some place I do not want to be. I do know how this feels. Why do we endow food decisions with such power? As Dr. May points out, for many, food is a magnet for emotions. I marvel at Michelle's candor and incisive, albeit self-effacing, humor. Perhaps there is a better way to make peace with food. I turn to our guest with guts for more insight. Kay Joyner will be with us live in the studio. She tells us her story next. Stay tuned while we take a quick station break. I need a refill of Courage Cocktail. I'd like to remind you of the 5th annual WCOM FM fundraiser, Acoustic Fest, Thursday, October 13th, 7 to 10 p.m. at The Cave. That's 452 and a half West Franklin Street, featuring Tim Stambaugh, Birds and Arrows, Harmonica Bob, and Near Blind James. Thank you. Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show, where we are sipping a special brew off the menu called Fearless Eating. Joining me today in our studio is our guest with guts, Miss Kay Joyner of Durham, North Carolina. Welcome, Kay. We are grateful you are with us in the studio. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work?
Thanks, Leanne. It's really nice to be here. I am a certified personal trainer. I'm also a wellness coach, and I am a licensed facilitator for the Am I Hungry program.
Well, now, what does this mean in terms of your experiences as a coach, a physical coach, and how you could you tell us how that became, how your interest in this diet, or excuse me, I shouldn't use the word diet, but this program and lifestyle change happened?
Sure. As a personal trainer, I worked with clients who often came in to see me who were ready to start an exercise program. And what I found was a lot of times they were exercising, doing what they were told as far as their fitness program was, but they weren't losing weight. And so I started doing some research. I talked to other trainers. They were having the same problem. I started doing some research, and I found the Am I Hungry program. So I actually read about it and was really impressed by it. So I decided to take it to become a facilitator. And as I took the course, I found that it had a really surprising personal benefit for me as well.
And what was that surprising benefit for you?
Well, like Michelle, I too was a closet yo-yo dieter. I restricted my food intake pretty rigidly to maintain my weight, and because I actually was afraid of food. Sounds kind of strange, but I didn't feel like I had any power when it came to food. And that manifested itself in ways such that whenever I would eat something fun, like a piece of chocolate cake, I would start binging. And particularly if there was stress in my life, I managed my emotions with eating, and I would start and basically wouldn't stop until either I was either numb or I was just so full that I couldn't eat anymore. And most of the time I felt out of control. I felt ashamed of myself. I felt angry a lot of the times. I didn't even allow myself to go out to eat with friends sometimes because I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to control myself. And I oftentimes really just hated myself because of that.
I didn't expect to hear this answer. And it resonates an authentic voice because of this relationship with food that is in many, many people's lives not established on healthy grounds. There must have been some magic to what you heard Michelle say. Can you tell me what did it for you?
There was absolutely some magic. It's in Am I Hungry? I learned that overeating and binging is a coping strategy. It's not a very effective coping strategy, however, and it's because whenever we try to manage our emotions with food, it doesn't work, because food is good for one thing, and that's for filling our physical needs for nourishment. It doesn't work for filling our emotional needs for nourishment. And when I learned that, it changed everything. That was probably the most pivotal point in the program for me, learning to distinguish between the need for emotional nourishment and the need for physical nourishment.
One of the hardships I think that topic brings, that level of awareness, is that when we start describing measurements, we can measure our food intake, we can measure calories, we can measure how many minutes on a treadmill. And so we're describing things that are quantifiable and in some ways give us a sense of control. Moment you start going into the idea of emotional needs, I don't think there's a measurement for our emotional needs. There's no equivalent of calories. I need 3,000 calories of emotional needs. I better find it immediately. You know, this measurement just goes out the window.
Well, I agree with that. And it's also interesting that I found with myself and with a lot of my clients is that we don't even recognize that we have needs, first of all. And second of all, once we recognize that we do have them, we don't really know exactly what they are or how to meet them. So oftentimes we stuff them with food.
One of the reasons I wanted to bring Michelle May, Dr. May, into our audience is because of her elegant and deceptively simple notion that this pendulum, this yo-yo stuff, ultimately is not sustainable. could you talk about in your work as a facilitator how you preemptively address the yo-yo syndrome? How do you stop that dead in its track?
Well, I don't think that diets are sustainable. Like you said, you can't count, measure forever. It's just not something that you can do. So when you learn how to recognize that you have two distinctly different things, one, a physical need for fuel and for nourishment, and two, an emotional need for whatever, then you can address both of those separately. That is sustainable.
When a person recognizes, develops this awareness that, gee, maybe something else is off here, and they come into this type of program, what can they expect?
Well, the first thing that we do is explain the basics of the Am I Hungry program. And we give compassionate, constructive guidelines to people. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And we help them to connect with their inner intelligence.
Is this a fancy way of saying instincts?
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
I think Michelle uses that. She talks about becoming an instinctive eater rather than a restrictive eater or a overeater or a yo-yo.
Okay, so it's an emotional intelligence?
I think it's just inner intelligence. It's your own inner intelligence. It's partly emotional. It's partly your body's intelligence.
I see. So once you explain that we have inside information to help us navigate towards health, swim towards health, which means activity as well as food, then, and we may not be all that familiar with this inner knowing. So do you play games with people to make them aware of this? Or, you know, I'm trying to think if somebody were so disconnected, what we could do.
Well, and that's it. I think that I was, and I think that most of the people that I meet are very disconnected from their inner intelligence. And that's why they find themselves floundering and trying all different kinds of tricks to help them with this problem. Tricks that don't work until they actually become connected.
Are there surprises to you when a client comes who wants to either do more of a workout, do more dieting? How do you wrap the two together? We didn't get into that discussion with Dr. May, but I bet you could help us address where is that fit? How do the two fit together?
Well, first of all, I believe that the body was designed to move. And I don't think that it functions optimally if it doesn't move. But I've also found in my work and with myself that neither diet nor exercise work in isolation. So a combination of the two is what you need for optimal health.
Now, are there any downsides to this particular plan?
I honestly haven't found any. Leanne, Am I Hungry is not a diet. It's a lifestyle plan. Mm-hmm. And so it's a place where you learn to make gradual, sustainable changes that lay a foundation for new, healthier habits.
When you, in closing, I'd like to know if there was a big surprise in the line of work that you do. Like over and over again, are you ever surprised by something?
I'm surprised all the time. I'm actually surprised I'm here.
Well, I'm glad you found us.
But I think what I would like to say is that Am I Hungry is really the best program that I've ever found, and I've tried tons of them. But it teaches us effective ways to make permanent and sustainable changes that are lifestyle changes. And it's translated for me not just to my eating, but also in other areas of my life. I find that since I became less afraid of food, I'm less afraid of life. I trust my body more. I trust life more. And it's changed the way I relate to everything.
That is an extremely remarkable comment about growth and journey when you said that you've reached a sense of peace, that you trust yourself. And it must have been a serious commitment of time, effort, and love to get you to this place.
I think it's a process. I don't think any one thing works for any one person. That's why a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work for everyone. This worked for me in ways that were beyond my wildest imagination. I learned to enjoy my food. When I learned to do that, I learned to trust. I learned to enjoy life. And, you know, life needs to be enjoyed. That's what makes it worth living.
Absolutely. Why, thank you, Kay. Now, you can reach Kay at the website of Dr. Michelle Mays, www.amihungry.com. And this is the best way to communicate with directly with Kay and other facilitators of this program, should you be interested, and to just kind of explore and learn something and perhaps consider following up with this lifestyle change.
Yeah, if you can, at the website, you can find out more about my workshop. I have a workshop upcoming in starting September the 29th.
That's quick. That's coming fast.
Mm-hmm. That's
are there seats in that?
Yes.
There's still seats. They're good.
There are. That's for the Chapel Hill Durham area, but there are also other facilitators that you can find out about on the website as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. Intention seems to be the new buzzword. Eating intentionally, enjoying things, establishing a plan with the future with intention. Are we on to something here? I'd like to know what you're thinking about today's Courage Cocktail. Each week, as you know, I try to bring together pieces of information that help people grow stronger. Let me know what you're thinking. Today's quick nip are the words of the poet Maya Angelou. Courage is the most important of all virtues, because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue consistently. You can practice any virtue erratically, but nothing consistently without courage. Today's mailbag comments and streamed in on Courage Cocktail's Facebook page after we posted pictures of the Triangle Rock Club visit this past Sunday. Liz from North Carolina asks, "Are you hooked yet?" Well, my answer is yes. It may be my new winter playground. I get bored at gyms, and this may be the perfect antidote to flabby arms. Tish from the Cape asked, "Yikes, you can say that again." Well, rock gyms are self-paced and safe. I admit it. I feel exhilarated when I get to the top. I need that immediate gratification, that sense of I finished what I started. Much of my work is centered on building things, which takes a great deal of time. 90% of our work here on the Radio Show Hour is research that's slow going. Getting to the top of that wall delivers a sense of accomplishment that I crave. Now, if only laundry could feel the same way, my life would be perfect. I look forward to spending time with you next week. Thank you for joining me today. You bring the lunch, and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. Coming up is Somos Latinos with your DJ, Jesse. This is WCOM-LP-FM 103.5, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, North Carolina.